business. But to placate him, she tossed out the same response she'd mastered since she'd found out she was coming. I just didn't want to talk to him, okay? And I don't want to have to spend my summer here either. He pushed the hair out of his eyes. So leave. Yeah, right. Where am I supposed to go? Let's go to Florida. She blinked. What? I know a guy who's got a place down there just outside of Tampa. If you want, I'll bring you. We can stay there as long as you want. My car's over there. She stared at him as if in shock. She wasn't even sure what to say. The very concept was ridiculous, as was the fact he'd even suggested it. I can't go to Florida with you. I just met you. And what about Blaze? What about her? You're with her. So? He kept his face neutral. This is too weird. She shook her head and stood. I think I'll go see how Blaze is doing. Marcus reached into his pocket for a fireball. You know I was kidding, right? Actually, he hadn't been kidding. He'd said it for the same reason he'd thrown the fireball at her. To see how far he could push her. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm still going over there to talk to her. Marcus watched her stalk off. As much as he admired that dynamite little body, he wasn't sure what to make of her. She dressed the part, but unlike Blaze, she didn't smoke or show any interest in partying, and he got the sense that there was more to her than she was letting on. He wondered if she came from money. Made sense, right? Apartment in New York, house at the beach. Family had to have money to afford things like that. But then again, there wasn't a chance she'd fit in with people around here who had money, at least the ones he knew. So which one was it? And why did it matter? Because he didn't like people with money. Didn't like the way they flaunted it. And didn't like the way they thought they were better than other people because of it. Once, before he'd dropped out, he'd heard a rich kid at school talking about the new boat he got for his birthday. It wasn't a piece of crap skiff. This was a 21-foot Boston Whaler with GPS and sonar, and the kid kept bragging about how he was going to use it all summer and dock it at the slips at the country club. 3 days later, Marcus set the boat on fire and watched it burn from behind the magnolia tree on the 16th green. He told no one what he'd done, of course. Tell one person, and you might as well have confessed to the cops. Teddy and Lance were cases in point. Put them in a holding cell, and they'd crumple as soon as a door clanged shut. Which was why he insisted they do all the dirty work these days. Best way to keep them from talking was to make sure they were even more guilty than he was. Nowadays, they were the ones who stole the booze, the ones who beat the bald guy unconscious at the airport before taking his wallet, the ones who painted the swastikas on the synagogue. He didn't necessarily trust them, didn't even particularly like them, but they always went along with his plans. They served a purpose. Behind him, Teddy and Lance continued to act like the idiots they were, and with Ronnie gone, Marcus was antsy. He didn't intend to sit here all night doing nothing. After Blaze got back, after he ate his fries, he figured they'd go wandering. See what came up. Never knew what might happen in a place like this, on a night like this, in a crowd like this. One thing was certain. After a show, he always needed something more, whatever that meant. Glancing over to the food booth, he saw Blaze paying for the fries, Ronnie right behind her. He stared at Ronnie, again willing her to turn his way, and eventually she did. Nothing much, just a quick peek, but that was enough to make him wonder again what she'd be like in bed. Probably wild, he thought. Most of them were, with the right kind of encouragement. Chapter 5. Will. No matter what he was doing, Will could always feel the weight of the secret pressing down on him. On the surface, everything seemed normal. In the last 6 months, he'd gone to his classes, played basketball, attended the prom, and graduated from high school, college-bound. Hadn't been all perfect, of course. 6 weeks ago, he'd broken up with Ashley, but it had nothing to do with what had happened that night, the night he could never forget. Most of the time, he was able to keep the memory locked away. But every now and then, at odd times, it all came back to him with visceral force. The images never changed or faded. The images never blurred around the edges. As though viewing it through someone else's eyes, he would see himself running up the beach and grabbing Scott as he stared at the raging fire. "What the hell did you do?" he remembered screaming. "It's not my fault," Scott had screamed back. It was only then, however, that Will realized they weren't alone. In the distance, he noticed Marcus, Blaze, Teddy, and Lance watching them, and he knew at once they'd seen everything that happened. They knew. As soon as Will grabbed for his cell phone, Scott stopped him. "Don't call the police. I told you it was an accident." His expression was pleading. "Come on, man, you owe me." News coverage had been extensive the first couple of days, and Will had watched the segments and read the articles in the paper, his stomach in knots. It was one thing to cover for an accidental fire. Maybe he could have done that. But someone had been injured that night, and he felt a sickening surge of guilt whenever he drove by the site. It didn't matter that the church was being rebuilt or that the pastor had long since been released from the hospital. What mattered was that he knew what had happened and hadn't done anything about it. "You owe me." Those were the words that haunted him the most. Not simply because he and Scott had been best friends since kindergarten, but for another, more important reason. And sometimes, in the middle of the night, he would lie awake, hating the truth of those words and wishing for a way to make things right. Oddly enough, it was the incident at the volleyball game earlier in the day that triggered the memories this time. Or rather, it had been the girl he'd collided with. She hadn't been interested in his apologies, and unlike most girls around here, she hadn't tried to mask her anger. She didn't simmer and she didn't squeal. She was self-possessed in a way that struck him as instantly different. After she'd stormed off, they'd finished out the set, and he had to admit he'd missed a couple of shots he ordinarily wouldn't have. Scott had glared at him and, maybe because of the play of light, he'd looked exactly as he had on the night of the fire when Will had pulled out his cell phone to call the police. And that was all it took to set those memories loose again. He'd been able to hold it together until they'd won the game, but after it ended, he'd needed some time alone. So he'd wandered over to the fairgrounds and stopped at one of those overpriced, impossible-to-win game booths. He was getting ready to shoot an overinflated basketball at the slightly too high rim when he heard a voice behind him. "There you are," Ashley said. "Are you avoiding us?" "Yes," he thought. "Actually, I was." "No," he answered. "I haven't taken a shot since the season ended, and I wanted to see how rusty I am." Ashley smiled. Her white tube top, sandals, and dangly earrings showed off her blue eyes and blonde hair to maximum effect. She'd changed into the outfit since the final volleyball game of the tournament. Typical. She was the only girl he'd ever known who carried complete outfit changes as a regular rule, even when she went to the beach. At the prom last May, she'd changed 3 times. One outfit for dinner, another for the dance, and a third for the party afterward. She'd actually brought along a suitcase, and after pinning on her corsage and posing for photographs, he'd had to lug it to the car. Her mother hadn't found it unusual that she packed as though she were heading off on vacation instead of a dance, but maybe that was part of the problem. Ashley had once taken him to glimpse inside her mom's closet, The woman must have had a couple of hundred different pairs of shoes and 1,000 different outfits. Her closet could have housed a Buick. Don't let me stop you. I'd hate for you to be out a dollar. Will turned away, and after zeroing in on the rim, he sent the ball arcing toward the basket. It bounced off the rim and backboard before dropping in. That was one. Two more, and he'd actually win a prize. As the ball rolled back, the carnival worker sneaked a glance at Ashley. Ashley, meanwhile, hadn't seemed to have even noticed the worker's presence. When the ball rolled down the net and back to Will, he picked it up again and glanced at the carnival worker. Has anyone won today? Of course! Lots of winners every day! He continued to stare at Ashley as he answered. No surprise there. Everyone always noticed Ashley. She was like a flashing neon sign for anyone with an ounce of testosterone. Ashley took another step forward, pirouetted, and leaned against the booth. She smiled at Will again. Ashley had never been one for subtlety. After being crowned homecoming queen, she'd worn the tiara all night. "You played well today," she said, "and your serve has gotten a lot better." "Thanks," Will answered. "I think you're almost as good as Scott." "No way," he said. Scott had been playing volleyball since he was 6. Will had taken up the game only after his freshman year. "I'm quick and I can jump, but I don't have the complete game Scott does."
"I'm just telling you what I saw."
Focusing on the rim, Will exhaled, trying to relax before shooting the ball. It was the same thing his coach had always told him to do at the free throw line. Not that it ever seemed to improve his percentage. This time, though, the ball swished through the net. 2 for 2.
"What are you going to do with the stuffed animal if you win?" she asked.
"I don't know. Do you want it?"
"Only if you want me to have it."
He knew she wanted him to offer it to her as opposed to asking him for it. After 2 years together, there were few things he didn't know about her. Will grabbed the ball, exhaled again, and took his final shot. This one, however, was a touch too hard, and the ball bounced off the back rim.
"That was close," the worker said. "You should try again."
"I know when I'm beat."
"Tell you what, I'll take a dollar off. $2 for 3 shots.
"That's all right."
$2, and I'll let both of you take 3 shots.
He grabbed the ball, offering it to Ashley.
"I'd love to see you give it a try."
Ashley stared at the ball, making it obvious she'd never even contemplated such an idea, which she probably hadn't. "I don't think so," Will said, "but thanks for the offer." He turned toward Ashley. "Do you know if Scott is still around?"
"He's at the table with Cassie, or at least that's where they were when I went to find you. I think he likes her."
Will headed in that direction, Ashley right beside him.
"So we were talking," Ashley said, sounding almost casual, "and Scott and Cassie thought it might be fun to head over to my place. My parents are in Raleigh for some event with the governor, so we'd have the place to ourselves."
Will had known this was coming.
"I don't think so," he said.
"Why not? It's not like anything exciting is happening around here."
"I just don't think it's a good idea."
"Is it because we broke up? It's not like I want us to get back together."
"Which was why you came to the tournament," he thought, "and got dressed up tonight, and came to find me, and suggested going to your place since your parents aren't home." But he didn't say those things. He wasn't in the mood to argue, nor did he want to make things any harder than they already were. She wasn't a bad person. She just wasn't for him. "I've got to be at work early tomorrow morning, and I spent all day playing volleyball in the sun," he offered instead. "I just want to go to sleep." She grabbed his arm, bringing him to a stop.
"Why don't you take my calls anymore?"
He said nothing. There was really nothing he could say.
"I want to know what I did wrong," she demanded. You didn't do anything wrong. Then what is it? When he didn't answer, she gave him a beseeching smile. Just come over and we'll talk about it, okay? He knew she deserved an answer. The only problem was that it was an answer she wouldn't want to hear. Like I said, I'm just tired. You're tired, Scott bellowed. You told her you were tired and you wanted to go to sleep? Something like that. Are you insane? Scott stared at him across the table. Cassie and Ashley had long since headed up the pier to talk, no doubt dissecting everything Will had said to Ashley, adding unnecessary drama to a situation that probably should have remained private. With Ashley, though, there was always drama. He had the sudden sense that the summer was going to be a long one. I am tired, Will said, aren't you? Maybe you didn't hear what she was suggesting. Me and Cassie, you and Ashley, her parents' place at the beach. She mentioned it, and we're still here because... I already told you. Scott shook his head. No, see, that's where you lose me. You use the I'm tired excuse on your parents when they want you to wash the car or when they tell you to get up so you can make it to church, not when it comes to an opportunity like this. Will said nothing. Though Scott was only a year younger, he'd be a senior at Laney High School in the fall. He often acted as if he were Will's older and wiser brother. Except that night at the church. See that guy over there at the basketball booth? Now, him I get. He stands there all day trying to get people to play the game so he can earn a little money and buy himself some beer and cigarettes at the end of his shift. Simple. Uncomplicated. Not my kind of life, but one I can understand. But you, I don't get. I mean, did you see Ashley tonight? She's gorgeous. She looks like that chick in Maxim. And? My point is, she's hot. I know. We were together for a couple of years, remember? And I'm not saying you have to get back together with her. All I'm suggesting is that the four of us head over to her place. Have some fun. See what happens. Scott leaned back in his seat. And by the way, I still don't understand why you broke up with her in the first place. It's obvious she's still into you, and you two always seem perfect together. Will shook his head. We weren't perfect together. You've said that before, but what does that mean? Is she like psycho or something when you two are alone? What happened? Did you find her standing over you with a butcher knife, or did she howl at the moon when you went to the beach? No, nothing like that. Just didn't work out, that's all. It just didn't work out, Scott repeated. Can you even hear yourself? When Will showed no signs of relenting, Scott leaned across the table. Come on, man. Do this for me, then. Live a little. It's summer vacation. Take one for the team. Now you sound desperate. I am desperate. Unless you agree to go with Ashley tonight, Cassie won't go with me. And we're talking about a girl who's ready to romance the stone. She wants to free Willie. I'm sorry, but I can't help you. Fine. Ruin my life. Who cares, right? You'll survive. He paused. You hungry? A little, Scott grumbled. Come on. Let's get some cheeseburgers. Will got up from the table, but Scott continued to pout. You need to practice digging, he said, referring to the earlier volleyball games. You were sending the ball in every direction. It was all I could do to keep us in the games. Ashley told me I was as good as you are. Scott snorted and pushed up from the table. She doesn't know what she's talking about. After standing in line for their food, Will and Scott moved to the condiment stand where Scott drenched his burger in ketchup. It squeezed out the sides as Scott put the bun back on. That's disgusting, Will commented. So get this. There was this guy named Ray Kroc, and he started this company called McDonald's. Ever heard of it? Anyway, on his original hamburger, in many ways the original American hamburger, mind you, he insisted that ketchup be added, which should tell you how important it is to the overall taste. Keep talking. You're just so fascinating. I'm going to get something to drink. Get me a bottle of water, will you? As Will walked off, something white flashed by him, heading in Scott's direction. Scott saw it, too, and instinctively lunged out of the way, dropping his cheeseburger in the process. "What the hell you think you're doing?" Scott demanded, spinning around. On the ground lay a wadded-up box of French fries. Behind him, Teddy and Lance had their hands stuffed in their pockets. Marcus was standing between them, trying and failing to appear innocent. "I don't know what you're talking about," Marcus answered. "This," Scott snarled, kicking the box back at them. It was the tone, Will would later think, that made everyone around them tense. Will felt the hair on his neck prickle at the palpable, almost physical dislocation of air and space, a tremor that promised violence. Violence that Marcus obviously wanted, as if he were baiting him. Will saw a father scoop up his son and move away, while Ashley and Cassie, back from the pier, froze on the outskirts. Off to the side, Will recognized Galadriel. She called herself Blaze these days, circling closer. Scott glared at them, his jaw clenching. "You know, I'm getting sick and tired of your crap." "What you gonna do?" Marcus smirked. "Shoot a bottle rocket at me?" That was all it took. As Scott took a sudden step forward, Will pushed his way frantically through the crowd, trying to reach his friend in time. Marcus didn't move. Not good. Will knew he and his friends were capable of anything, and worst of all, they knew what Scott had done. But Scott, in a fury, didn't seem to care. As Will surged forward, Teddy and Lance fanned out, drawing Scott into their midst. He tried to close the gap, but Scott was moving too quickly, and suddenly everything seemed to happen at once. Marcus took a half step backward as Teddy kicked over a stool, forcing Scott to jump out of the way. He slammed into a table, toppling it. Scott caught his balance and balled his hands into fists. Lance closed in from the side. As Will forced his way forward, gaining momentum, he vaguely heard the wailing sounds of a toddler. Breaking free of the crowd, he veered toward Lance when all at once a girl stepped forward into the fray. "Just stop," the girl shouted, thrusting her arms out. "Knock it off, all of you." Her voice was surprisingly loud and authoritative, enough to make Will stop in his tracks. Everyone else froze, and in the sudden silence, the cries of the toddler sounded shrill. The girl pivoted, glaring at each of the brawlers in turn, and as soon as Will saw the purple streak in her hair, he realized exactly where he'd seen her before. Only now she was wearing an oversized T-shirt with a fish on the front. "The fight's over. There is no fight. Can't you see this kid is hurt?" Challenging them to contradict her, she pushed her way between Scott and Marcus and stooped to the crying toddler, who had been knocked over in the commotion. He was 3 or 4, and his shirt was pumpkin orange. When the girl spoke to him, her voice was soft, her smile reassuring. "Are you okay, sweetie? Where's your mom? Let's go find her, okay?" The toddler seemed to focus momentarily on her shirt. "This is Nemo," she said. "He got lost, too. Do you like Nemo?" Off to the side, a panic-stricken woman holding a baby pushed through the crowd, oblivious to the tension in the air. "Jason, where are you? Have you seen a little boy, blonde hair, orange shirt?" Relief crossed her features as soon as she spotted him. She adjusted the baby on her hip as she rushed to his side. "You can't run off like that, Jason," she cried. "You scared me. Are you okay?" "Nemo," he said, pointing at the girl. The mother turned, noticing the girl for the first time. "Thank you. He just wandered off when I was changing the baby's diaper, and It's okay, the girl said, shaking her head. He's fine. Will watched the mother lead her kids away. Then he turned back to the girl, noticing the kind way she smiled as the young boy toddled off. Once they'd moved far enough away, however, the girl suddenly seemed to realize that everyone in the crowd was staring at her. She crossed her arms, self-conscious when the crowd began to part for a rapidly approaching police officer. Marcus quickly murmured something to Scott before melting back into the crowd. Teddy and Lance did the same. Blaze turned to follow them as well, and surprising Will, the girl with the purple streak reached out to grab her arm. "Wait! Where are you going?" she called out. Blaze shook her arm free, walking backward.
"Bowers Point.
Where's that?"
"Just head down the beach. You'll find it."
Blaze turned and rushed after Marcus. The girl seemed unsure what to do. By then the tension, so thick only moments before, was dissipating as quickly as it had arisen. Scott righted the table and headed toward Will just as the girl was approached by a man he assumed was her father. "There you are," he called out with a mixture of relief and exasperation. "We've been looking for you. You ready to go?" The girl, who'd been watching Blaze, was obviously unhappy to see him. "No," she said simply. With that, she strode into the crowd, heading for the beach. A young boy walked up to the father.
"I guess she's not hungry," the boy offered.
The man put his hand on the boy's shoulder, watching as she descended the steps to the beach without a backward glance.
"I guess not," he said.
"Can you believe that?" Scott raged, pulling Will away from the scene he'd been observing so closely. Scott was still hyped up, the adrenaline surging.
"I was about to pound that freak."
Yeah, he responded. He shook his head. "I'm not sure Teddy and Lance would have let you. They wouldn't have done anything. Those guys are all show."
Will wasn't so sure about that, but he didn't say anything. Scott took a breath.
"Hold up. Here comes a cop."
The officer approached them slowly, obviously trying to gauge the situation.
"What's going on here?" he demanded.
"Nothing, officer," Scott answered, sounding demure.
"I heard there was a fight."
"No, sir." The officer waited for more, his expression skeptical. Neither Scott nor Will said anything. By then, the condiment area was filling with people going about their business. The officer surveyed the scene, making sure he wasn't missing anything. Then suddenly his face lit up with recognition at the sight of someone standing behind Will.
"Is that you, Steve?" he called out.
Will watched him stride off toward the girl's father. Ashley and Cassie sidled up to them. Cassie's face was flushed.
"Are you okay?" she fluttered.
"I'm fine," Scott answered.
"That guy's crazy. What happened? I didn't see how it started."
"He threw something at me, and I wasn't going to put up with it. I'm sick and tired of the way that guy acts. He thinks everyone's afraid of him and that he can do whatever he wants, but the next time he tries it, it's not going to be pretty."
Will tuned him out. Scott was always a big talker. He did the same thing during their volleyball matches, and Will had learned long ago to ignore it. He turned away, catching sight of the officer chatting with the girl's dad, wondering why the girl had been so intent on getting away from her father, and why she was hanging out with Marcus. She wasn't like them, and he somehow doubted she knew what she was getting into with them. As Scott went on, assuring Cassie that he could easily have handled the three of them, Will found himself straining to overhear the police officer's conversation with the girl's father.
"Oh, hey, Pete," the father said.
"What's going on?"
"Same old stuff," the officer responded. "Doing my best to keep things under control out here. How's the window coming?"
"Slowly."
"That's what you said the last time I asked."
"Yeah, but now I got a secret weapon. This is my son, Jonah. He's going to be my assistant this summer."
"Yeah? Good for you, little man." Wasn't your daughter supposed to come down here too, Steve?
She's here, the father said.
Yeah, but she left again, the boy added. She's pretty mad at Dad.
Sorry to hear that.
Will watched the father point toward the beach.
Do you have any idea where they might be going?
The officer squinted as he scanned the waterline.
Could be anywhere, but a couple of those kids are bad news, especially Marcus. Trust me, you don't want her keeping company with him.
Scott was still boasting to a rapt Cassie and Ashley. Blocking him out, Will suddenly felt the urge to call out to the police officer. He knew it wasn't his place to say anything. He didn't know the girl, didn't know why she'd stormed off in the first place. Maybe she had a good reason. But as he saw the concern crease her dad's face, he recalled her patience and kindness when she'd rescued the toddler, and the words were out before he could stop them.
She went to Bowers Point, he announced.
Scott stopped talking in mid-sentence, and Ashley turned to him with a frown. The other three studied him uncertainly.
Your daughter, right?
When the father nodded slightly, he went on.
She's going to Bowers Point.
The officer continued to stare at him, then turned back to the father.
When I finish up here, I'll go talk to her and see if I can convince her to go home, okay?
You don't have to do that, Pete. The officer continued to study the group in the distance.
I think in this instance, it's better if I go.
Inexplicably, Will felt a strange wave of relief. It must have shown, because when he turned back toward his friends, each of them was staring at him.
What the hell was that all about? Scott demanded.
Will didn't answer. He couldn't, because he didn't really understand it himself.
Chapter 6. Ronnie. Under normal circumstances, Ronnie probably would have appreciated an evening like this. In New York, the lights from the city made it impossible to see many stars, but here, it was just the opposite. Even with the layer of marine haze, she could clearly make out the Milky Way, and directly to the south, Venus glowed brightly. The waves crashed and rolled rhythmically along the beach, and on the horizon she could see the faint lights of half a dozen shrimp boats. But the circumstances weren't normal. As she stood on the porch, she glared at the officer, livid beyond belief. No, change that. She wasn't just livid. She was seething. What had happened was so overprotective, so over the top, she could still barely process it. Her first thought was simply to hitchhike to the bus station and buy herself a ticket back to New York. She wouldn't tell her dad or her mom. She'd call Kayla. Once she was there, she would figure out what to do next. No matter what she decided, it couldn't be any worse than this. But that wasn't possible. Not with Officer Pete here. He stood behind her now, making sure she went inside. She still couldn't believe it. How could her dad, her own flesh-and-blood father, do something like this? She was almost an adult. She hadn't been doing anything wrong, and it wasn't even midnight. What was the problem? Why did he have to turn this into something far bigger than it was? Oh, sure. At first, Officer Pete had made it sound like it had been an ordinary, run-of-the-mill order to vacate their spot on Bowers Point, something that hadn't surprised the others. But then he turned to her, zeroed in on her, specifically. "I'm taking you home," he'd said, making it sound as if she were 8 years old. "No thanks," she'd responded. "Then I'll have to arrest you on vagrancy charges and have your dad bring you home." It dawned on her then that her dad had asked the police to bring her home, and there was an instant when she was frozen in mortification. Sure, she had problems with her mom, and yeah, she'd blown off her curfew now and then, but never, ever, not even once had her mother sent the police after her. On the porch, the officer intruded on her thoughts. "Go on in," he prompted, making it fairly clear that if she didn't open the door, he would. From inside, she could hear the soft sounds of the piano, and she recognized the sonata by Edvard Grieg in E minor. She took a deep breath before opening the door, then slammed it shut behind her. Her father stopped playing and looked up as she glared at him. You sent the cops after me? Her dad said nothing, but his silence was enough. Why would you do something like that? She demanded. How could you do something like that? He said nothing. What is it? You didn't want me to have fun? You didn't trust me? You didn't get the fact that I don't want to be here? Her father folded his hands in his lap. I know you don't want to be here. She took a step forward, still glaring. So you decide you want to ruin my life, too? Who's Marcus? Who cares? She shouted. That's not the point. You're not going to monitor every single person I ever talk to, so don't even try. I'm not trying. I hate being here. Don't you get that? And I hate you, too. She stared at him, her face daring him to contradict her, hoping he'd try, so she'd be able to say it again. But her dad said nothing, as usual. She hated that kind of weakness. In a fury, she crossed the room toward the alcove, grabbed the picture of her playing the piano, the one with her dad beside her on the bench, and hurled it across the room. Though he flinched at the sound of breaking glass, he remained quiet. What? Nothing to say? He cleared his throat. Your bedroom's the first door on the right. She didn't even want to dignify his comment with a response, so she stormed down the hall, determined to have nothing more to do with him. Good night, sweetheart, he called out. I love you. There was a moment, just a moment, when she cringed at what she'd said to him. But her regret vanished as quickly as it had come. It was as if he hadn't even realized she'd been angry. She heard him begin to play the piano again, picking up exactly where he'd left off. In the bedroom. Not hard to find, considering there were only three doors off the hallway, one to the bathroom and the other to her dad's room, Ronnie flipped on the light. With a frustrated sigh, she peeled off the ridiculous Nemo t-shirt she'd almost forgotten she was wearing. It had been the worst day of her life. Oh, she knew she was being melodramatic about the whole thing. She wasn't stupid. Still, it hadn't been a great one. About the only good thing to come out of the whole day was meeting Blaze, which gave her hope that she'd have at least one person to spend time with this summer. Assuming, of course, that Blaze still wanted to spend time with her. After Dad's little stunt, even that was in doubt. Blaze and the rest of them were probably still talking about it, probably laughing about it. It was the kind of thing Kayla would bring up for years. The whole thing made her sick to her stomach. She tossed the Nemo shirt into the corner. If she never saw it again, it would be too soon. And began slipping off her concert t-shirt. Before I get too grossed out, you should know I'm in here. Ronnie jumped at the sound, whirling around to see Jonah staring at her. Get out! She screamed. What are you doing in here? This is my room! No, it's our room, Jonah said. He pointed. See? Two beds. I'm not going to share a room with you. He tilted his head to the side. You're going to sleep in Dad's room? She opened her mouth to respond, considered moving to the living room before quickly realizing she wasn't going out there again, then closed her mouth without a word. She stomped toward her suitcase, unzipped the top, and flung open the lid. Anna Karenina lay on top, and she tossed it aside, searching for her pajamas. I rode the Ferris wheel, Jonah said conversationally. It was pretty cool to be so high. That's how Dad found you. Great. It was awesome. Did you ride it? No. You should have. I could see all the way to New York. I doubt it. I could. I can see pretty far, with my glasses, I mean. Dad said I had eagle eyes. Yeah, right. Jonah said nothing. Instead, he reached for the teddy bear he'd brought with him from home. It was the one he clutched whenever he was nervous. And Ronnie winced, regretting her words. Sometimes the way he talked made it easy to think of him as an adult. But as he pulled the bear to his chest, she knew she shouldn't have been so harsh. Though he was precocious, though he was verbal to the point of annoyance at times, he was small for his age, more the size of a 6 or 7-year-old than a 10-year-old. It had never been easy for him. He'd been born 3 months prematurely, and he suffered from asthma, poor vision, and a lack of fine motor coordination. She knew kids his age could be cruel. I didn't mean that. With your glasses, you definitely have eagle eyes. Yeah, they're pretty good now, he mumbled. But when he turned away and faced the wall, she winced again. He was a sweet kid. A pain in the butt sometimes, but she knew he didn't have a mean bone in him. She went over to his bed and sat beside him. Hey, she said. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I'm just having a bad night. I know, he said. Did you go on any of the other rides? Dad took me on most of them. He almost got sick, but I didn't. And I wasn't scared at all in the haunted house. I could tell the ghosts were fake. She patted him on the hip. You've always been pretty brave. Yeah, he said. Like that time when the lights went out in the apartment? You were scared that night. I wasn't scared, though. I remember. He seemed satisfied with her answer. But then he grew quiet. And when he spoke again, his voice was barely above a whisper. Do you miss Mom? Ronnie reached for the covers. Yeah. I kind of miss her, too. And I didn't like being here alone. Dad was in the other room, she said. I know. But I'm glad you came home anyway. Me too. He smiled before looking worried again. Do you think Mom is doing okay? She's fine, she assured him. She pulled up the covers. But I know she misses you too. In the morning, with sunlight peeking through the curtains, it took Ronnie a few seconds to realize where she was. Blinking at the clock, she thought, you've got to be kidding me. 8 o'clock? In the morning? In the summer? She plopped back down, only to find herself staring at the ceiling, already knowing that sleep was out of the question. Not with the sun shooting daggers through the windows. Not with her father already hammering on the piano in the living room. As she suddenly remembered what had happened last night, the anger she felt at what her father had done resurfaced. Welcome to another day in paradise. Outside the window, she heard the distant roar of engines. She rose from the bed and pulled aside the curtain, only to jump back, startled at the sight of a raccoon sitting atop a torn bag of garbage. While the strewn garbage was gross, the raccoon was cute, and she tapped the glass, trying to get its attention. It was only then that she noticed the bars on the window. Bars on the window. Trapped. Gritting her teeth, she whirled around and marched into the living room. Jonah was watching cartoons and eating a bowl of cereal. Her dad glanced up but continued to play. She put her hands on her hips, waiting for him to stop. He didn't. She noticed that the picture she'd thrown was back in place atop the piano, albeit without the glass. You can't keep me locked up all summer, she said. It's not going to happen. Her dad glanced up, though he continued to play.
What are you talking about?
You put bars on the window. Like I'm supposed to be your prisoner? Jonah continued to watch the cartoon. I told you she'd be mad, he commented. Steve shook his head, his hands continuing to move across the keyboard.
I didn't put them up. They came with the house.
I don't believe you. They did, Jonah said. To protect the art. I'm not talking to you, Jonah. She turned back to her dad. Let's get one thing straight. You're not going to spend this summer treating me like I'm still a little girl. I'm 18 years old.
You won't be 18 until August 20th, Jonah said behind her.
Would you please stay out of this? She whirled around to face him. This is between me and Dad.
Jonah frowned. But you're not 18 yet.
That's not the point.
I thought you forgot.
I didn't forget. I'm not stupid.
But you said,
would you just shut up for a second? She said, unable to hide her exasperation. She swiveled her gaze back to her dad, who'd continued to play, never missing a note. What you did last night was... She stopped, unable to put all that was going on, all that had happened, into words. I'm old enough to make my own decisions. Don't you get that? You gave up the right to tell me what to do when you walked out the door. And would you please listen to me?
Abruptly, her dad stopped playing.
I don't like this little game you're playing.
He seemed confused.
What game? This. Playing the piano every minute I'm here. I don't care how much you want me to play. I'm never going to play the piano again, especially not for you.
Okay.
She waited for more, but there was nothing. That's it? She asked. That's all you're going to say? Her dad seemed to debate how to answer.
Do you want breakfast? I made some bacon.
Bacon? She demanded. You made bacon.
Uh-oh, Jonah said. Her dad glanced at Jonah.
She's a vegetarian, Dad, he explained.
Really? He asked.
Jonah answered for her. For 3 years, but she's weird sometimes, so it makes sense.
Ronnie stared at them in amazement, wondering how the conversation had been hijacked. This wasn't about bacon. This was about what happened last night.
Let's get one thing straight, she said. If you ever send the police to bring me home again, I won't just refuse to play piano. I won't just go home. I'll never, ever speak to you again. And if you don't believe me, try me. I've already gone 3 years without talking to you, and it was the easiest thing I've ever done.
With that, she stomped back to her room. 20 minutes later, after showering and changing, she was out the door. Her first thought as she trudged through the sand was that she should have worn shorts. It was already hot, the air thick with humidity. Up and down the beach, people were already lying on towels or playing in the surf. Near the pier, she spotted half a dozen surfers floating on their boards, waiting for the perfect wave. Above them, at the head of the pier, the festival was no more. The rides had been disassembled and the booths had already been hauled away, leaving behind only scattered garbage and food remnants. Moving on, she wandered through the town's small business district. None of the stores was open yet, but most were the kind she'd never set foot in anyway. Touristy beach shops, a couple of clothing stores that seemed to specialize in skirts and blouses that her mom might wear, and a Burger King and McDonald's, two places she refused to enter on principle. Add in the hotel and a half dozen upscale restaurants and bars, and that was pretty much it. In the end, the only interesting locales were a surf shop, a music store, and an old-fashioned diner where she could imagine hanging out with friends. If she ever made any. She headed back to the beach and skipped down the dune, noting that the crowds had multiplied. It was a gorgeous, breezy day. The sky overhead was a deep, cloudless blue. If Kayla had been here, she'd even consider spending the day in the sun, but Kayla wasn't here, and she wasn't about to put on her suit and go sit by herself. But what else was there to do? Maybe she should try to get a job. It would give her an excuse to be out of the house most of the day. She hadn't seen any help wanted signs in the windows downtown, but someone had to be hiring, right? Did you make it home okay? Or did the cop end up making a pass at you? Looking behind her, Ronnie saw Blaze squinting up at her from the dune. Lost in thought, she hadn't even noticed her. No, he didn't make a pass at me.
Oh, so you made a pass at him?
Ronnie crossed her arms. Are you done? Blaze shrugged, her expression mischievous, and Ronnie smiled. So, what happened after I left? Anything exciting?
No, the guys took off and I don't know where they went. I ended up just crashing at Bowers Point.
You didn't go home?
No.
She got to her feet, brushing the sand from her jeans.
Do you have any money?
Why? Blaze stood straight.
I haven't eaten since yesterday morning. I'm kind of hungry.
Chapter 7. Will. Will stood in the well beneath the Ford Explorer in his uniform, watching the oil drain while simultaneously doing his best to ignore Scott, something easier said than done. Scott had been haranguing him about the previous evening on and off since they'd arrived at work that morning. "See, you were thinking about this all wrong," Scott continued, trying yet another tack. He retrieved 3 cans of oil and set them on the shelf beside him. "There's a difference between hooking up and getting back together. Aren't we done with this yet? We would be if you had any sense, but from where I stand, it's obvious you were confused. Ashley doesn't want to get back together with you." "I wasn't confused," Will said. He wiped his hands on a towel. "That's exactly what she was asking." "That's not what Cassie told me." Will set aside the towel and reached for his water bottle. His dad's shop specialized in brake repairs, oil changes, tune-ups, and front-end alignments, and his dad always wanted the place to look as though the floor had been waxed and the place just opened for business. Unfortunately, air conditioning hadn't been quite as important to him, and in the summer, the temperature was somewhere between the Mojave and the Sahara. He took a long drink, finishing the bottle before trying to get through to Scott again. Scott was far and away the most stubborn person he'd ever known. The guy could seriously drive him nuts. "You don't know Ashley the way I do," he sighed. "And besides, it's over and done. I don't know why you keep talking about it." "You mean aside from the fact that Harry didn't meet Sally last night? Because I'm your friend and I care about you. I want you to enjoy this summer. I want to enjoy this summer. I want to enjoy Cassie. So go out with her then. If only it was that easy. See, last night I suggested the same thing. But Ashley was so upset that Cassie didn't want to leave her. I'm really sorry it didn't work out." Scott was dubious. "Yeah, I can tell." By that point, the oil had drained. Will grabbed the cans and headed up the steps while Scott stayed below to replace the plug and dump the used oil into the recycling barrel. As Will opened the can and set the funnel, he glanced at Scott below. "Hey, by the way, did you see the girl who stopped the fight?" he asked. "The one who helped the little boy find his mom?" It took a moment for the words to register. "You mean the vampire chick in the cartoon shirt?" "She's not a vampire." "Yeah, I saw her. On the short side, ugly purple streak in her hair, black fingernail polish. You poured your soda over her, remember? She thought you smelled." "What?" "I'm just saying," he said, reaching for the pan. "You didn't notice her expression after you slammed into her, but I did. She couldn't get away from you fast enough. Hence, you probably smelled. She had to buy a new shirt." "So?" Will added the second can. "I don't know. She just surprised me. And I haven't seen her around here before." "I repeat. So?" The thing was, Will wasn't exactly sure why he was thinking about the girl, particularly considering how little he knew about her. Yeah, she was pretty. He'd noticed that right off, despite the purple hair and dark mascara. But the beach was full of pretty girls. Nor was it the way she'd stopped the fight in its tracks. Instead, he kept coming back to the way she'd treated the little boy who'd fallen. He'd glimpsed a surprising tenderness beneath her rebellious exterior, and it had piqued his curiosity. She wasn't like Ashley at all. And it wasn't that Ashley was a bad person, because she wasn't. But there was something superficial about Ashley, even if Scott didn't want to believe it. In Ashley's world, everyone and everything was put into neat little boxes. Popular or not, expensive or cheap, rich or poor, beautiful or ugly. And he'd eventually grown tired of her shallow value judgments and her inability to accept or appreciate anything in between. But the girl with the purple streak in her hair, he knew instinctively that she wasn't that way. He couldn't be absolutely sure, of course, but he'd bet on it. She didn't put others into neat little boxes because she didn't put herself in one. And that struck him as refreshing and different, especially when compared with the girls he'd known at Laney. Especially Ashley. Though things were busy at the garage, his thoughts kept drifting back to her more often than he expected. Not all the time, but enough to make him realize that for whatever reason, he definitely wanted to get to know her a little better. And he found himself wondering whether he would see her again.
Chapter 8. Ronnie. Blaze led the way to the diner Ronnie had seen on her walk through the business district. And Ronnie had to admit that it did have some charm, particularly if you were fond of the 1950s. There was an old-fashioned counter flanked with stools. The floor was black and white tiles, and cracked vinyl booths lined the walls. Behind the counter, the menu was written on a chalkboard, and as far as Ronnie could tell, the only change to it in the last 30 years had been the prices. Blaze ordered a cheeseburger, a chocolate shake, and French fries. Ronnie couldn't decide and ended up ordering only a Diet Coke. She was hungry, but she wasn't exactly sure what kind of oil they used in their deep fryer. And neither, it seemed, did anyone else at the diner. Being a vegetarian wasn't always easy. And there were times she wanted to give up the whole thing. Like when her stomach was growling. Like right now. But she wouldn't eat here. She couldn't eat here. Not because she was a vegetarian on principle kind of person, but because she was a vegetarian because she didn't want to feel sick kind of person. She didn't care what other people ate. It was just that whenever she thought about where meat actually came from, she'd imagine a cow standing in a meadow or Babe the pig, and she'd feel herself getting nauseated. Blaze seemed happy, though. After she placed her order, she leaned back in the booth. "What do you think about the place?" she asked. "It's neat. It's kind of different. I've been coming here since I was a kid. My dad used to bring me every Sunday after church for a chocolate shake. They're the best. They get their ice cream from some tiny place in Georgia, but it's amazing. You should get one." "I'm not hungry." "You're lying," Blaze said. "I heard your stomach growling, but whatever. It's your loss. But thanks for this." "No big deal." Blaze smiled. "So, what happened last night? Are you, like, famous or something?" "Why would you ask that?" "Because of the cop and the way he singled you out. There had to be a reason." Ronnie made a face. "I think my dad told him to go find me. He even knew where I lived." "Sucks being you." When Ronnie laughed, Blaze reached for the salt shaker. After tipping it over, she began sprinkling it onto the table while using a finger to mold it into a pile. "What did you think of Marcus?" she asked. "I didn't really talk to him. Why?" Blaze seemed to choose her words carefully. "Marcus never liked me," she said. "Growing up, I mean. I can't say that I liked him very much either. He was always kind of mean, you know? But then, I don't know, a couple of years ago, things changed. And when I really needed someone, he was there for me." Ronnie watched the salt pile grow. "And?" "I just wanted you to know." "Fine," she said. "Whatever. You too. What are you talking about?" Blaze scraped some of the black polish from her fingernails. "I used to compete in gymnastics, and for maybe 4 or 5 years, it was the biggest thing in my life. I ended up quitting because of my coach. He was a real hard ass, always telling you what you did wrong, never complimenting you on what you did right. Anyway, I was doing a new dismount off the beam one day, and he marched forward screaming at me about the proper way to plant and how I have to freeze and everything I'd heard him scream about a million times before. I was tired of hearing it, you know? So I just said, whatever. And he grabbed my arm so hard that he left bruises. Anyway, he says to me, 'Do you know what you're saying when you say whatever? It's just a code word for the F word, followed by you. And at your age, you never, ever say that to anyone.'" Blaze leaned back. "So now, when someone says it to me, I just say, 'You too.'" Just then, the waitress arrived with their food, and she placed it in front of them with an efficient flourish. When she was gone, Ronnie reached for her soda. "Thanks for the heartwarming story." "Whatever." Ronnie laughed again, liking her sense of humor. Blaze leaned across the table. "So, what's the worst thing you've ever done?" "What?" "I'm serious. I always ask people that question. I find it interesting." "All right," Ronnie countered. "What's the worst thing you've ever done?" "That's easy. When I was little, I had this neighbor, Mrs. Banderson. She wasn't the nicest lady, but she wasn't a witch either. I mean, it's not like she locked her doors on Halloween or anything. But she was really into her garden, you know, and her lawn.
I mean, if we ever walked across it on our way to the school bus, she'd come storming out, screaming that we were ruining the grass. Anyway, one spring, she planted all these flowers in her garden. Hundreds of them. It was gorgeous. Well, there was this kid across the street named Billy. And he didn't like Mrs. Banderson much either. Because one time he'd hit a baseball and it went into her backyard and she wouldn't give it back. So one day, we were poking around his garden shed and we came across this big sprayer filled with Roundup, the weed killer. Well, he and I snuck out after dark one night and sprayed all those new flowers. Don't ask me why. I guess at the time we thought it would be kind of funny. No big deal. Just buy some new ones, right? You couldn't tell right away, of course. It takes a few days before it starts working. And Mrs. Banderson was out there every day, watering and pulling weeds before she noticed that all her new flowers had started to wilt. At first, Billy and I laughed about it, but then I started to notice she'd be out there before school trying to figure out what was wrong, and she'd still be out there when I came back from school. And by the end of the week, all of them were dead. "That's terrible," Ronnie cried, giggling despite herself. "I know, and I still feel bad about it. It's one of those things that I wish I could undo." "Did you ever tell her or offer to replace the flowers?" "My parents would have killed me, but I never, ever walked across her lawn again." "Wow. Like I said, it's the worst thing I've ever done. Now it's your turn." Ronnie thought about it. "I didn't talk to my dad for 3 years. "I already know that, and it's not that bad. Like I said, I try not to talk to my dad either, and my mom has no idea where I am most of the time." Ronnie glanced away. Above the jukebox was a picture of Bill Haley and his Comets. "I used to shoplift," she said, subdued. "A lot. Nothing big, just more for the thrill of doing it." "Used to?" "Not anymore. I got caught. Actually, I got caught twice, but the second time it was an accident. I went to court, but the charges were continued for a year. Basically, it means that if I don't get into trouble again, the charges will be dismissed." Blaze lowered her burger. "That's it? That's the worst thing you've ever done?" "I never killed someone's flowers, if that's what you mean. Or vandalized anything." "You've never stuck your brother's head in the toilet? Or crashed a car? Or shaved the cat? Or something?" Ronnie gave a small smile. "No. You're probably the most boring teenager in the world." Ronnie giggled again before taking a sip of her soda. "Can I ask you a question?"
"Go ahead."
"Why didn't you go home last night?" Blaze took a pinch of the salt she'd piled up and sprinkled it over her fries.
"I didn't want to."
"What about your mom? Doesn't she get mad?"
"Probably," Blaze said.
Off to the side, the door to the diner swung open, and Ronnie turned to see Marcus, Teddy, and Lance heading toward their booth. Marcus wore a t-shirt emblazoned with a skull, and a chain was attached to the belt loop of his jeans. Blaze scooted over, but strangely, Teddy took a seat beside her while Marcus squeezed in next to Ronnie. As Lance pulled up a chair from an adjoining table and flipped it around before sitting, Marcus reached for Blaze's plate. Both Teddy and Lance automatically grabbed for the fries.
"Hey, that's for Blaze," Ronnie cried, trying to stop them. "Get your own."
Marcus turned from one to the other.
"Yeah?"
"It's okay," Blaze said, pushing the plate toward him. "Really, I won't be able to eat it all anyway." Marcus reached for the ketchup, acting as though he'd proved his point.
"So, what are you two talking about?"
"From the window, it looked intense."
"Nothing,"
Blaze said.
"Let me guess. She's telling you about her mom's sexy boyfriend and their late-night trapeze acts, right?"
Blaze wiggled in her seat.
"Don't be gross."
Marcus gave Ronnie a frank stare.
"Did she tell you about the night one of her mom's boyfriends came sneaking into her room? She was like, 'You've got 15 minutes to get the hell out of here.'"
"Shut up, okay? That's not funny. And we weren't talking about him."
"Whatever,"
he said, smirking. Blaze reached for her shake as Marcus began eating the burger. Teddy and Lance grabbed more fries, and over the next few minutes, the three of them devoured most of what was on the plate. To Ronnie's dismay, Blaze said nothing.
and Ronnie wondered about that. Or actually, she didn't wonder. It seemed obvious that Blaze didn't want Marcus to get mad at her, so she let him do whatever he wanted. She'd seen it before. Kayla, for all her tough posturing, was the same way when it came to guys. And generally, they treated her like dirt. But she wouldn't say that here. She knew it would only make things worse. Blaze sipped her milkshake and put it back on the table. So, what do you guys want to do after this?
We're out, Teddy grunted. Our old man needs me and Lance to work today.
They're brothers, Blaze explained. Ronnie studied them, not seeing the resemblance.
You are?
Marcus finished the burger and pushed the plate to the center of the table.
I know. It's hard to believe parents could have two such ugly kids, huh? Anyway, their family owns a piece-of-crap motel just over the bridge.
The pipes are like 100 years old, and Teddy's job is to plunge the toilets when they get clogged. Ronnie wrinkled her nose, trying to imagine it.
Really?
Marcus nodded.
Gross, huh? But don't worry about Teddy. He's great at it. A real prodigy. He actually enjoys it.
And Lance here, his job is to clean the sheets after the noontime crowd rolls through.
Ew, Ronnie said.
I know, it's totally disgusting, Blaze added. And you should see some of the people that go for the hourly rates. You could catch a disease just walking into the room. Ronnie wasn't sure how to respond to that, so instead she turned to Marcus.
So what do you do? She asked.
Whatever I want, he answered.
Which means? Ronnie challenged.
Why do you care?
I don't, she said, keeping her voice cool. I was just asking.
Teddy grabbed the last of the fries from Blaze's plate.
It means he hangs out at the motel with us, in his room.
You have a room at the motel?
I live there, he said.
The obvious question was why, and she waited for more, but Marcus stayed quiet. She suspected he wanted her to attempt to tease the information out of him. Maybe she was reading too much into it, but she had the sudden sense that he wanted her to be interested in him, wanted her to like him, even though Blaze was right there. Her suspicions were confirmed when he reached for a cigarette. After he lit it, he blew the smoke toward Blaze, then turned to Ronnie.
What are you doing tonight?
He asked. Ronnie shifted in her seat, suddenly uncomfortable. It seemed like everyone, Blaze included, was waiting for her answer.
Why?
We're having a little get-together at Bowers Point.
Not just us. A bunch of people.
I want you to come.
Without the cops this time?
Blaze studied the tabletop, toying with the pile of salt. When Ronnie didn't answer, Marcus rose from the table and headed for the door without turning back.
Chapter 9. Steve. Hey, Dad, Jonah called out. He was standing behind the piano in the alcove as Steve brought the plates of spaghetti to the table. Is that a picture of you with Grandma and Grandpa?
Yeah, that's my mom and dad.
I don't remember that picture. From the apartment, I mean.
For a long time. It was in my office at school,